is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. And today will be better than yesterday, although yesterday was pretty spectacular. Taylor Schwenk is working from the Schwenk Studios in Connecticut. I'm Buster Olney working from Montana, where yesterday, Taylor, the Vermonters were here and we were busy. My family members, my stepdad, Ed, my brother, Sam, my sister, Amelia, we were out here and we were working on the vegetable beds. And pretty excited. We got a lot done yesterday.
Just a wholesome family activity. I mean, it's really heartwarming to see how excited you've been about this. And you sent me the pictures. They look great. I can't wait to see what blooms from those beautiful beds.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for months. And so, yesterday, because I'm certainly not someone who's going to be capable of that, but you know, they built the beds and we lay down a bunch of bark and just get ready for spring. And boy, it's coming together. Today, we're going into Yellowstone, which I think two things are going to happen. From what I understand, we're going to see a lot of wildlife because there's a lot out early in the spring. And the second thing is, Taylor, a lot of complaining about my driving.
Okay? Oh.
I fully expect, you know, I don't know. I've heard complaints from Liz and from my family members that I drive too fast. Some say I drive too slow. All I know is, Taylor, the record is pristine. I've never called an insurance company. I've never had an accident.
That's so interesting. So your family friends and family think you are a bad driver. Has Carl or any of the guys like on Sunday Night Baseball ever driven with you? I'd love to get their perspective.
I don't know. But all I know is my record's perfect. Right?
I think
they have to examine themselves because one, as I say, I've heard I'm too fast, I'm too slow, and I'm just like, you know what? Perfect record. Never been in an accident my whole life.
The back of the baseball card does not lie, Buster.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
It's written
in
stone.
It's something that Mike Trout would aspire for, you know, if he were to ever, to look at his driving record compared to mine. I think he would be looking for mine. On the other hand, his baseball record's a lot better than mine. We're going to be talking with Mike Trout today on the podcast. He's got a lot of great observations about other players. And Taylor, I think that knowing how superstitious he is, he's going to be wanting to come back on the podcast very soon, right? Because he was moved to the leadoff spot for the game on Tuesday. Ron Washington looking for a jolt. You know, Trout has struggled the last few days. Well, guess what he did in his first plate appearance last night?
Here's Trout lifting a ball high and deep out into right center field, and that ball is Trout of here. He just hit it out. Trout leading off for the first time this season in that leadoff spot, gives the Angels a 1-0 lead.
Mike Trout moving closer to 400 career home runs. We talk about that. As I say, we talked about a lot of ground. And how about Trout stepping in on his own and talking about a new idea for baseball with the draft?
Buster, he was chatty. I felt like he would have talked to us all the way into his spot at Angel Stadium. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff on this interview, Buster. Just wait, everyone.
Yep, it was a lot of fun. All right, the Guardians played the Red Sox, and Jose Ramirez did this with Cleveland leading 2-1 in the bottom of the eighth.
Swung on, hit pretty well to right. Back goes Ref Snyder. Track, wall, gone! Jose Ramirez took a 97-mile-an-hour fastball on the outside corner and shot it the other way to right.
That was Tom Hamilton, WTAM 1100. Cleveland is 17-6. And Taylor, we're going to be talking with Tom Hamilton later this week on the podcast because the Guardians are looking so good. I'm looking forward to that conversation. The Red Sox, on the other hand, are beset by injuries. It was confirmed that first baseman Tristan Casas is going to be out indefinitely. He has a broken rib on his left side. Manager Alex Cora told reporters there's no timetable when the 24-year-old will be back. The Diamondbacks placed pitcher Merrill Kelly on the 15-day injured list with a right shoulder strain. DJ LeMahieu has been trying to work his way back for the Yankees, but he played in a minor league rehabilitation game on Tuesday, took one plate appearance, played one inning in the field, and then took himself out of the game because of discomfort in that fractured right foot that he had suffered in spring training. He's going to meet with a specialist later on Wednesday, according to the Yankees. The Ones Who Get It Done is brought to you by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call Grainger.com or just stop by. You know who got it done on Tuesday? Ellie De La Cruz of the Cincinnati Reds. This is what he did to extend the Cincinnati lead in the fifth.
The payoff pitch to De La Cruz. Swung on and lifted high and deep left center field. Rojas is back. He's at the wall. He looks up and it is gone. An opposite field two-run home run for Ellie De La Cruz. It is 7-1 Reds.
And the Reds beat the Phillies 7-1, ending Philadelphia's seven-game winning streak. By the way, did you hear that crowd sound in the back? That sounded like it was like a field trip for a bunch of, fourth and fifth graders. Can you play that sound again?
Rojas is back. He's at the wall. He looks up, and it is gone. An opposite field two-run home run for Ellie De La Cruz. It is 7-1 Reds.
Am I wrong? Did it sound like a higher pitch or what?
They were going nuts. I mean, maybe it was Ellie De La Cruz bobblehead night. I don't know. They were going wild. And I mean, the Reds are playing really well right now. Don't blame
them. Yeah, a lot of teams in the center are playing well. The Pirates and the Brewers are off to good starts. Those two teams played each other, and Andrew McCutchen got it done for the Pittsburgh Pirates in the bottom of the first.
First pitch is swung on, cranked right down the left field line, and he's done it again! Another leadoff home run for Andrew McCutchen! He yanked that right down the left field line, and the Pirates lead it 1-0.
From Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan, I was Joe Block. The Dodgers face the Nationals. Shohei Ohtani got it done in the top of the ninth.
Matt Barnes, first base out of the rubber, delivers. Swing and a long drive, deep to right, way, way back, and gone. Goodbye, into the second level, and section 240, a long home run for Shohei Ohtani.
Of about 450 feet, the Dodgers beat the Nationals 4-1. That was Charlie Slows, by the way, on the Nationals radio network. Ohtani so far batting .364, .430, .677 slugging percentage. One of the questions I asked Mike Trout, how has Ohtani gotten better? An interesting observation from one future Hall of Famer about another. The Chicago Cubs faced the Houston Astros, and Cody Bellinger gave the Cubs an early lead.
Cody Bellinger at the plate. Here's the pitch from France. Swung on and drilled. Deep right field. Forget about it. Long gone. A belly bomb. And the Cubs strike first. A 2-0 lead over the Astros here in the first.
Matt from the Cubs Radio Network. Cubs went 7-2. We've got them on Sunday Night Baseball this week. We actually were talking in text messages yesterday, Taylor. Maybe Cody Bellinger will wear their mic this week.
Ooh, he'd be a great guy to wear the microphone. I hope he does.
Yeah, that. We had him on the mic once before in Sunday Night Baseball, but it was a really quick inning, and we walked away saying, man, he was good, like in the 12 seconds we had him with a pitch clock, right?
Yeah, he's
so we're hoping. Yeah, we're hoping that he wears the microphone for us on Sunday night when they play the Boston Red Sox in Fenway Park. The Royals, the Blue Jays, Bobby Witt Jr. is long, quickly establishing himself as one of the best players in the sport. This is what he did in the bottom of the fifth.
Gausman deals, and Bobby will swing it hard by the third baseman down the left field line. Fair ball, and into the corner. One run is in. Here comes Garcia around third, and he will score as the throw is cut off. Two runs score on a Bobby Witt Jr. double, and the Royals take the lead. It's 3-2.
That would be the final score of that from 610 KCSP. Some other notes. Veteran Johnny Cueto signed with the Texas Rangers. I talked to Chris Young, the general manager for the Rangers, and he said one of his mantras is, as he works in his job, you can never have enough starting pitching. We know they have all these guys coming back from the injury list at some point this year, and one of those is Max Scherzer, who's set to make a minor league rehab start later today, which will be his first action since he had surgery last fall. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, the Low Post and Hoop Collective are in full gear for the NBA playoffs. Pretty good playoffs so far. It's hard when you're keeping track of baseball to get into the NBA. I feel like I'm out of the loop, but if you're in the loop, you should definitely check out the Low Post, Hoop Collective on this platform or on YouTube.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. So Aaron Boone has gotten ejected more than any other manager in baseball in recent years. And in the Yankees game on Monday against the Athletics, Aaron Boone was yelling at plate umpire Hunter Wendelstedt about whether or not Estuary Ruiz was hitting a foot or swung on a pitch. And Wendelstedt was not happy. He yelled at Boone. Give a listen to what happened in this game.
The 0-2. And that hit Ruiz. He did not swing, so
take another look at the slider down and in, and it clearly gets that.
I'm looking for him to get hit by the pitch. Got anything else to say? You're gone. Okay, man.
Well, there you go. And now Aaron's saying, I didn't say anything.
You're gone.
Aaron saying, hold on a second, I didn't say
anything. So an absolutely crazy situation. Great field mics from the YES Network there, Brian Rucco on doing play-by-play. What you heard was Wendelstedt basically yelling at Aaron Boone, like, I had him hit by the pitch, on the pitch, and if you have anything else to say about it, I'm going to eject you. And the cameras show Aaron Boone looking away, not speaking, actually at one point looking at his fingernails. Like, he wasn't talking at all to Wendelstedt. And the cameras show that a fan sitting in the front row behind Aaron Boone yelled something at the home plate umpire, and immediately he ejects Aaron Boone. So it was kind of nuts, and that's what Booney was yelling at the umpire when he went out there, that he didn't say anything. Here was Aaron Boone talking about it after the game.
Aaron, how do you wrap your head around what happened in the first inning?
Hard to. I really didn't even go after Hunter. You know, I was more upset that, you know, on the appeal, and I said, Hunter, you can call it too, and he came back at me pretty hard, to which I didn't respond. I just said, okay. Went down, and it's embarrassing. It really is embarrassing.
I mean, everybody can see the video, but is that a scenario where you reach out to Major League Baseball about that?
Yes, but just not good.
Yeah, it was not good. Hunter Wendelstedt's response to a reporter after the game was not good, and I think if you're Aaron Boone, there's something about this which is not good, big picture. Taylor, what was your takeaway?
Buster, it's like, it's literally like a scene from a movie. It's so hilarious. And then Boone's, the way he responds to Meredith Marakovich's question, not good. It just had me on the floor. So funny. Hembo has an amazing stat coming up about Aaron Boone and his ejections. I was not surprised to hear it.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
And Hembo is Paul Amichides, the highest paid researcher in the history of the world. Hembo, how you doing this week?
Buster, I'm doing great, but no one cares how I'm doing. You're the fan of a Minnesota Vikings team that is on the clock and might be chasing down a new franchise quarterback this week. How are you doing on NFL draft week?
I'm very worried that they're going to mess it up, except for the fact that I think that they have an excellent coach, and I think they'll make really good personnel decisions. But I've read, you know, you were texting to me earlier today and giving me information, because I know nothing about this other than, you know, where they sit in the draft and how they've loaded up on all these resources. It's pretty clear they're going to make a trade. And you were like, they're going to get May. And I'm like,
Drake May.
No.
Pick number three.
I just don't want him, because I've, you know, have read enough where people are like, The accuracy is not good, which would just scare me.
It's like drafting a pitcher with the third pick. He's not that good at throwing strikes, but we're going to take him anyway.
Right. Well, it's kind of like Mullins. Didn't they have that in Mullins? Like
they,
Mullins,
they did. Like they sure did.
Lights up a lot of boards, but you know what? In the end, he's going to make a lot of mistakes, right?
Mm-hmm. Still got to live in the strike zone.
So what makes you think they're going to take May?
I think they're going to take Drake May because I think that Kevin O'Connell sees a lump of clay that he can sculpt into something beautiful. And you give Drake May 2 or 3 years, Buster, I think he has the chance to be the best quarterback in this class. If you're looking to microwave some success or find a player to start right away, he's probably not your guy. But I always like to say, it's a long-term outlook with these quarterbacks. I think Kevin O'Connell is an excellent quarterback's coach, and that infrastructure is perfect to plug in a young quarterback, although I don't think Drake May should take a single snap as a rookie if you draft him instead.
No, I like the signing of Sam Darnold. I think he's a perfect guy for the group of skill position guys they have. So we'll see where that goes. You're right. Anxiety's building as we get closer. There was a lot of anxiety. There was a lot of emotion at Yankee Stadium yesterday. Aaron Boone ejected. We just heard sound of Booney, his back and forth with Hunter Wendelstedt, who after the game, when he spoke with a pool reporter, he said, apparently what he said was that there was a fan right above the dugout. This isn't my first ejection in the entirety of my career. I never ejected a player or manager for something a fan has said. I understand that's going to be part of a story or something like that, because that's what Aaron was portraying. He's a manager of the Yankees, so he's the one who had to go. Wendelstedt also said, so instead of me being aggressive and walking down to the far end and trying to figure out who might have said it, I don't want to eject a player. We need to keep them in the game. That's what the fans pay to see. Aaron Boone runs the Yankees. He got ejected. In other words, Aaron Boone's going to answer for the sins of the others. I found this to be incomprehensible, and I'll tell you why after I get your view.
Yeah, of course, Buster, this is one of the most absurd things I've ever seen on a baseball field in 30-some years watching baseball. But can we at least take a moment to recognize that it is actually hilarious? I was watching this game live and obviously couldn't believe what I was seeing. I've never in my life seen the manager of a baseball team, let alone in the big leagues, ejected for something that a fan said. But the fact that after the game, Hunter Wendelstedt didn't just say, my bad, and instead double down on this ludicrous decision that he made at the time, obviously being super sensitive to start a game, was very strange to me. I think it's absolutely hysterical that it happened. But 3 hours later, he should have had the ability to look himself in the mirror based on the facts on the ground that he could have obtained at that point and said, yeah, look, guys, I made a mistake. This is E1. This is on me. Not to say that Aaron Boone is responsible for anything that anyone says coming aside from, the first base side of the field. It was very strange the way that it all ended.
Yeah, and I saw one video angle from yesterday from a fan in the stands where what the fan yelled from behind Aaron Boone was, just look at the plate. In other words, don't stare into the dugout. And that's in, he immediately reacts, right? When that's said, and I agree with you. And look, I get it that there might be confusion. But I'm with you too, that once he goes back into the umpire's dressing room and he looks at his phone and he sees a replay of Aaron Boone saying nothing after he warned him and then he ejected him, that to me was a bad decision that he didn't just come out and own it. And I don't understand why. He couldn't, knowing the history of someone like Jim Joyce, who, as you know, after he blew the call that cost, Galarraga his perfect game back in, 2010? Was that when that happened? And Joyce the next day, or right after the game, he came out and said, look, I made a mistake, and I blew it, and I feel terrible for the guy. I don't know why Wendelstedt doesn't just say that. You know what? I blew it. And I'd say this, too. And there's no question, yesterday the umpire was the one who made the mistake. If I'm Aaron Boone, I am looking at the situation saying, this is another example that I have a problem with the umpires. I've been really aggressive. I've been getting ejected a lot. Last year we saw Laz Diaz basically mock him as he went through and he's make, go ahead, draw your lines behind home plate. Go ahead. You know what? You're going to act like an idiot again. If I'm Aaron Boone, I am absorbing this reaction from Wendelstedt saying, you know what? part of the issue here is that I got a bad rep among the umpires. Is that fair?
Absolutely, Buster. That is an outstanding point to make. It's obvious that Aaron Boone was the victim here, but that doesn't mean that we still can't learn something from it. He's been ejected 35 times in 893 games. That's 3.9% of games. That's one in every 25 games. I went back and looked at every manager in the history of baseball, and that ranks in the top five. Like he is ejected at one of the five highest rates of any manager in the history of baseball. And it's been a really long time since anyone even approached this rate in terms of like current modern day managers who are typically a lot more in line with sort of a sort of mild manager, you might say, especially because we have replay. Aaron Boone has been ragging on umps for, you know, balls and strikes for as long as he's managed. And I think his players like the fact that he has their back. But at some point, I think you might actually be hurting yourself and hurting the team. And yesterday's a really good example of that. That was a reputation ejection. There's no other manager in baseball that would have been ejected in that context except for Aaron Boone. So it might be a learn for him, even though in this case, he most definitely was the victim here.
Aaron Boone, the Draymond Green of managers. Never quite thought of it that way when you talk about reputation ejection. Taylor, I always ask you to give the perspective of the fans. What was your take on all this?
Oh, yeah, so silly. But Hembo, that also came to mind. I was like, he gets ejected all the time. Like, I was, on one hand, like, oh, this is kind of wacky. On the other, I was like, well, he's getting thown out again. He does that every other week. So it's interesting that
it is the typical Aaron Judge experience, the typical Aaron Boone experience, the histrionics and stuff. So in this case, obviously he was the victim, but you know, the other 30 some odd times, you know, it's not the case. And umpires don't want to spend the 3 hours of their life every day getting ragged over balls and strikes. Who are we kidding? So that was definitely a reputation ejection if I've ever seen one.
Well, and I tell you what, like Earl Weaver was someone who would get ejected, right? And he was known as being a curmudgeon. Mm-hmm. Boone, on the other hand, is like the nicest guy ever. It's so the dichotomy between what Aaron Boone is and the perception he has with umpires is not mm-hmm. even close. All right. We're going to play a little game of panic or patience. Let's start out talking about the Houston Astros pitching. Are you at a stage where you have patience or you have panic?
I have patience for the Houston Astros pitching staff, Buster. I think this is a group that is going to get it together and potentially get it together quick. Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy, Luis Garcia, and Lance McCullers are all on the injured list right now. Valdez, we should see before the end of April. Javier and Urquidy, we should see sometime in May. And I think Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers are probably longer shots to be really impactful this season, but they are both on pace to return midseason. Now, are you going to go 5-for-5 with those guys and them returning to be the pitchers they formerly were? Probably not. That's the nature of the position, of course. But might you go 2-for-5 or 3-for-5? I think that is much likelier. Justin Verlander started over the weekend. I thought he looked great. I watched his entire start. And while there are still some other concerns on the staff, namely Hunter Brown, namely the worst bullpen in the American League right now, which is super bizarre, I think the Houston Astros pitching staff is going to be just fine. In fact, I think right now I'd play the Astros to make the playoffs at plus 105, maybe even to win the division at plus 210. I do not have a doomsday outlook upon the Houston Astros and upon the Houston Astros pitching staff. What say you?
I'm a little bit more concerned than you are. I think that these injuries they've had, for Framber Valdez will be back at some point, but as you and I have talked about, this was a problem for him, was how he was pitching. You know, that his issue with his fastball was a concern last year. And even if he comes back and he's healthy enough to pitch, there's no guarantee that that's going to be better, right? Christian Javier made an adjustment in spring training. He was throwing the ball well. Who knows where he's going to be physically? Hunter Brown, to me, is the key. Mm. Like Hunter Brown is someone who's got a lot of ability. I think he has not been as good as what the Astros expected to this point. He needs to be a hero in this situation. So we'll see if that winds up happening. But that's not the only problem that the Astros have. Jose Abreu, their first baseman, who's in year two of a deal of $58.5 million, making $19.5 million this year. He's hitting .068 with a .138 on base percentage, a .085 slugging percentage, which seems impossible. And he's generated an adjusted OPS that I didn't even think was, I didn't even realize that this was possible, minus -32. Like a bad adjusted OPS is 50, right? He's at minus -32. Panic? or patience?
It's panic. Buster, he has 5 total bases in 18 games. He has cost the Astros 1.4 WAR. He's been the worst player in baseball. And it's not a sudden fall off a cliff type move. This is something we could have seen coming based upon the last couple of years. It was an OPS plus of 134 2 years ago, and it regressed to 87 last season. So that's the output. That's what he's producing. But just look to what other pitchers are doing to him. Like, what does the league think of him? Well, they're challenging him. Right now, he's seeing 49% of pitches in the strike zone, the highest rate of his career. He's seeing the four-seam fastball with 37% frequency.
Wow.
That's the highest rate of his career. So if opposing pitchers are saying to themselves, I can challenge this guy within the zone, and I can challenge this guy with four-seam fastballs, then who am I to say they're wrong? It's obvious that the numbers that you put forth, Buster, are super loud. But I don't think it's fluky based upon the fact that opposing pitchers are seeing the same thing that you are. And so I'm very fearful that Jose Abreu has fallen off of that cliff. And keep in mind, he's played 2,200 professional games dating back to his time in Cuba. Like, he has a lot of wear and tear on that vehicle. 37 years old. I think there's a chance that Jose Abreu is not an everyday player for the Astros and is not an everyday player really, really soon. I think we'll see more John Singleton at bats. We might see more Victor Caratini at first base, but right now he's the worst player on the planet.
You know, I'd be interested to see if the Astros have checked his eyesight, because that's how bad it looks. Like, you're the point that you're kind of like looking for dramatic solutions.
Right.
You know, a hitter who can't see a pitch because his eyesight is regressed over time. That's kind of where we are. That's how bad he's been. Do you have panic or patience with the St. Louis Cardinals lineup?
I'm panicking. I think this lineup's in real trouble, Buster. Right now, they're averaging 3.5 runs a game. Only the A's and White Sox are averaging fewer. They've hit 15 homers this season. Only the White Sox have hit fewer. This was a team that ranked 19th in scoring last season, so it's not like they were an awesome run-scoring team, and we can look and say, so far, this is a fluke. I've got some really loud numbers when it comes to why they're one of the worst lineups in baseball right now. They can't hit the fastball. This is a team that cannot handle velocity. It's a 347 slug against fastball and a 105 isolated power. Both of those rank 29th. This is a crazy statistic, by the way, and one that's very predictive when it comes to modern day offenses. They've seen 542 pitches through 95 plus. They swung at 243 of them. They put 79 of them in play. And they've got 2 extra base hits. The St. Louis Cardinals as a team in the first 3 weeks of the season have 2 extra base hits on pitches thrown 95 plus. Lars Nupar is the only player in the order with a positive run value against the four-seam fastball. This team cannot hit velocity, and unfortunately, this is the worst time in the history of baseball to have built a lineup that cannot hit velocity. And I think Paul Goldschmidt is probably the microcosm here of the lineup. We've seen enormous regression with him. If he does not turn it around and turn it around quickly, I think this team is in big trouble. I think a lot is riding on his shoulders, and right now he is not carrying the load.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, I think I said that going into the year, that the offense will go as Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado go as 2 core guys. Aaron Judge is batting 174. He's got a 308 on base percentage. I don't know if we'd say that Yankee fans are panicking, but they're certainly concerned, which is why he was booed the other day. Maybe some of the silliest booing that I've ever heard after this start. What about you? Panic or patience?
I'm exercising patience when it comes to Aaron Judge. I mean, the numbers are really ugly. The numbers are ugly. You've articulated that. But I think Aaron Judge is just as likely to turn it around as quickly as we've seen him do in the past and have a monster season. There are some process-based stats, though, that I think are worth pointing out. StatCast has a measure that grades basically how often you were underneath the baseball. Not good contact. We're not talking about high-end contact here. He's been underneath 34% of his swings. His career average is 19. So basically close to double Aaron Judge is underneath the baseball. The ideal sort of launch angle that you might hope or expect is somewhere between 10 and 30 degrees. He's at 18% for that statistic, which is half his career average. In other words, Aaron Judge is under everything. You don't need the numbers to tell you that. If you watch as many Aaron Judge at-bats this year, Buster, as you've seen, he's under absolutely everything. Now, why is it happening? Well, he's 6'7". Obviously, the levers are long and the strike zone is enormous. So any mechanical issue that he's facing, and right now he's facing them, are going to be exacerbated because he has more surface area to cover than any hitter in the history of baseball. I'll say this. There's no way that he's 100% healthy. There just is no way. He had the oblique issue, Buster, in spring training. We obviously know that he had the imaging done then, has not missed any time because of it. But Aaron Judge is too good to be hitting this badly without there being some sort of obvious reason. There's no pitch type that's killing him. There's no specific count that's killing him. There's no obvious thing based upon his batted ball profile that's standing out. He just isn't good. I think there's a pretty clear and obvious mechanical flaw that's causing him to be beneath everything. And usually those things come from the fact that you're not 100% physically. He'll never tell you as much, but I bet you in an honest moment, Aaron Judge would tell you that he does not feel as good as he should, as good as he'd like to. And I think we can trace back to spring training to potentially look and say, maybe it's the oblique or maybe there's some other issue that we don't know about. But this is one of the best hitters on the planet when he's right. And now he is not close to being right.
I've mentioned the podcast before that my son and I are running a fantasy team together. And the relationship is very much Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson. It's getting ugly. And one of the things I've been just clamoring for, I'm like, dude, pick up Jared Jones. Go and get Jared Jones. What are you doing? And he counters, well, he's not really a strikeout guy. I'm like, I don't know. He strikes out a lot of hitters. I don't know if his stuff is strikeout stuff, but he's striking out a lot of hitters. What say you, Hembo?
I say that your son might not have a future as a scout. And here are the numbers to support that opinion. He's the fourth pitcher in the live ball era with 7 strikeouts in each of his first 5 career games. That's a stat that goes back 104 years. A couple other numbers that are really loud to me that are very encouraging about this young, prodigious pitcher. He has the highest put-away rate in the major leagues. When he gets to 2 strikes, he buries you. And if you look at a strikeout breakdown, got 19 on his slider and 17 on his 4-seam fastball. When you can use your fastball as both a setup pitch and a put-away pitch, that is a really good, mature sign of a pitcher's ability to win multiple ways, which is obviously super important. He also has way better command, Buster, than I'm expecting. The first pitch strike rate is 67%. The strikeout to walk rate is 35-4 in terms of the ratio. Now, the biggest question is, how long are they going to let him go? It's 120 innings, basically, in the minor leagues in each of the last 2 seasons, Buster. But the stuff is absolutely electric. He is bringing hitters to their knees, literally. The stuff is unbelievable. The stuff is as good as there is in the big leagues right now. I'd like to see them stretch him out. And by the way, I'd like to see he and Paul Skeens in the big leagues pitching in back-to-back days, because I think both of them are ready to do that. What say you?
Yeah, what say me is I finally badgered Jake into dropping Garrett Crochet and picking up Paul Skeens. We got that done the other day.
Okay, wonderful.
Like Jerry Jones stepped into the front office and just made it happen. They're like, let's go. Of course, he's still badgering me about the fact that I was like, pick up Jackson Holliday. So every night he's texting me, nice game for Jackson Holliday. Way to go, Dad. Loser. You know, he says about me.
That's very funny.
My favorite Mike Trout phrase that he always gives me when we finish a conversation where I ask him questions and then he turns it around on me. He said, what do you got on so-and-so? Okay. He's very curious about other players and other teams and things that they do. So I'll use the Mike Trout phrase to ask you about Mike Trout. What do you got on Mike Trout?
But Buster, I think there are very few things that bring me more joy as a baseball fan than watching Mike Trout be healthy, which he is right now and which he's not been, at least on balance over the last several seasons, of course. I don't think that it is hyperbole to say that if you were just to exclude those who either use steroids or those who we believe use steroids, that over the last 50 years, literally the last 50 years among all players to debut over that time, or you might say all the players to debut since the Willie Mays, Henry Aaron time, Mike Trout and Albert Pujols are probably the two best ones. Mike Trout is Mickey Mantle. Mike Trout is Ken Griffey Jr. Mike Trout is 80% of Willie Mays. And I say that as a student, as a history historian of baseball who absolutely knows and loves this stuff. And what I want to make sure, Buster, is that we all take the time to fully appreciate this. I think too often in Albert Pujols' 30s, we sort of forgot about him, neglected him. And I understand why. He was playing on a non-relevant team, as Mike Trout is, or at least has for much of his career, of course, sometimes in many cases the same team when it comes to Pujols and Trout. And also, we didn't have the chance to see him in the playoffs. But let's not allow that. Let's not allow perfect to be the enemy of great. And Mike Trout is objectively great. He's among the 25 greatest baseball players to ever live. It's a 992 career OPS. Any season in which he's been healthy, he has been among the very top of the American League MVP. As a Philly fan, would I love to see him play here? Of course. To see him play on a contender? Of course. But let's not ignore the fact that this is a Stan Musial, Mel Ott, Mickey Mantle, Cal Ripken Jr., Carl Yastrzemski, Frank Robinson kind of player. An all-time historical icon, a unicorn in baseball history. And I never want to lose sight of that. So I'm going to look to make sure that I enjoy Mike Trout's 30s more than I did Albert Pujols' 30s, because 50 years from now, if I'm fortunate enough to have a son that likes baseball as much as you do, and we're talking about what it was like to watch Mike Trout play, I would love to say, Buster, that I got to watch one of the greatest players that ever lived, and whatever happened in the playoffs, whatever didn't happen in the playoffs, be damned.
I agree with you, and I think that by the time he retires, he's going to be remembered in the way that you want him remembered. You know, he is 32 years old and currently has 86.3 wins above replacement for his career. As you know, that's well ahead of a lot of Hall of Famers. It's 32nd all time. The next guy he passes will be George Brett, and then Wade Boggs, and then Jimmy Fox, and then Al Kaline. And within a couple of years, it'll be Joe Morgan and Albert Pujols. And a couple of years after that, assuming he stays healthy, we're talking about Mickey Mantle, Frank Robinson, Ricky Henderson, Lou Gehrig. That's the sort of neighborhood he's beginning to move into as he moves through. And again, he's 32 years old. It's not like he's 37. He could wind up being right near the top of this list, which would be pretty cool.
But Buster, we've been playing baseball in this country for 150 years professionally. There are not two dozen that have ever come around that are better than this guy. I think you've identified it correctly. That war figure is astronomical. I was at the Baseball Hall of Fame last month, and it's always wonderful to see all the faces, all the plaques, all the exhibits, all the stats, all the everything. And Mike Trout someday is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer with 90-some percent of the vote, as well he should be. I just desperately hope that baseball fans can appreciate Mike Trout and spend less time discoursing about the team he plays on or the fact that he should demand a trade or other such nonsense. No. Enjoy watching Mickey Mantle while you have the chance to watch Mickey Mantle. That would be my dying wish.
All right, Hembo. Thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
Later, friends.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo. Right.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious, beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Used with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
Mike Trout has played now 14 seasons in the big leagues. And Mike, when I looked that up this morning, it kind of took my breath away. 14 years. Can you believe it?
When I was in high school, freshman year, I had a couple seniors come up to me and say, "Hey, you know, enjoy the 4 years here because it will go quick." And as soon as you know it, I was graduating high school, and it felt like the same thing when I first came up in the league. You know, it's enjoy every minute of it. Goes by quick. A lot of veteran guys, you know, mentioned the same thing. Just enjoy every minute of it. And like you said, it's pretty crazy how 14 years can go so fast. You know, it's been a blast.
So tell me a moment when you realized, like, man, I am older now. Like something happened, whether it was in a game or whether facing a player or something some other player said that really it jumped out at you.
Well, you start seeing guys in the 2000s come up and make their debuts, and you're like, phew, that's pretty young. But no, I think, you know, you've seen a lot of young guys coming up that are, 19, 20. And kind of makes you look, you know, makes you think about, you know, I was in their shoes at once. And now, you know, like you said, 14 years later, it's pretty crazy how quick things goes. And, yeah. So I don't take this putting on the uniform for granted, man. You never know.
So one thing I always like to do when I have you on is ask you about other players and sort of players who, and how they're developing. For example, Mookie Betts, who this year, for me, just watching him play, it feels like he's gone next level. Tell me what you're seeing in him.
Yeah, I got to obviously the start he's off to. I think it's everybody that plays the game of baseball. It's the start you want to start a season. There's no doubt in what Mookie's capable of doing. Obviously, you got to play with him a little bit in the WBC. You got to see how he works. And he just loves the game, and I think the time he puts in, the work, you know, talking to other players, and obviously seeing it firsthand at WBC, it was pretty remarkable, you know, to see his work ethic. And you know, it's funny to, you know, a couple of the guys we're talking about, we were watching, you know, his BP is just very simple. I'm not trying to hit the ball out of the yard, and you know. It's and then in the games, it's just like, you know, he's hitting 40 homers so in a season. So it's pretty remarkable to see. I'm extremely happy for him. I got to obviously know him over the years. He's fun to watch. He's one of the guys after games, you kind of want to follow just to see what he's been doing. He's, like I said, he's got to be a good friend of mine. Yeah, it's the start is unbelievable. It's, like you said, next level.
So when, as you know, when Shohei Ohtani first came to the United States, the talk among scouts was that he's going to be a really good pitcher, but offensively, maybe not. You know, they were kind of down on his potential as a hitter, but he's just grown and grown and grown. What have you seen in him in terms of specifically how he's gotten better?
Yeah. Obviously, to go way back, you know, like you said, when he first came over, he had this monster leg kick. You know, a lot of Japanese players have the leg kick, and you know, it kind of worked for him, I guess, in Japan. And then this game is about all about making adjustments, and you know, he started. I think it was a freeway series after spring training, or maybe just a little bit before the freeway series his first year. He got rid of that leg kick and just went to that little toe tap just kept the foot down and just trusted using his hands. And he's never looked back ever since. You know, watching him do his work, he keeps it simple. And, you know, simple is good. It's not complicated. Keeps his routine. You know, his routine was really simple in the cage. You know, before a game, it was, you know, a couple flips, a couple tee, and, you know, would escalate into the game as, you know, 3 for 4 with a couple homers or, you know, just a great overall game. It was pretty impressive. But like I said, the game is all about adjustments. And, you know, he made an adjustment early, and it's pretty incredible to watch.
Jose Altuve of the Houston Astros, who just seems rolling along. When I talked to him a couple weeks ago, he mentioned how much it's clear he's beginning to focus on 3,000 hits. What do you see in Altuve?
Yeah, I love watching him play. Love watching him hit. can hit all pitches up, down, away. Some of the pitches he's hit against us over the years, it still amazes me. Like, you know, how do you even make contact on him? And the way he plays the game, man, he's a winner, and you know, great all overall teammate. And like I said, I got to know him over the years, and just I love seeing guys that you know, go in there and have great at bats, battle, and you know, he can hit the ball to the ballpark too.
Juan Soto, who is another guy who this year seemingly is taking his game to the next level.
Yeah, Juan, he's another guy. I love guys that are patient at the plate and can still hit the ball to the ballpark and put good swings on balls, have good at bats. He's one of the guys where I look, you can see when he gets in the box, it's 1v1, man. It's like, here, it's me versus you. Let's go. And, you know, I love that because that's the mentality, you know, I have in the box. You know, sometimes I don't show it as much as he does, obviously, but I love watching the play. You know, he took it. He's taking, pinstripes in stride. You know, he loves being in the moment, and, you know, I'm happy for him. I got to know him over a course. Yeah, I don't really know him that well, but, you know, talking to a couple of the guys that played with him and coached him, you know, got to get the idea of how he was. And, you know, he just wants to play and put up good numbers. And it's fun to watch.
When I mentioned that when I talked to Altuve a couple weeks ago, I asked him what number was important for him to get. And before I finished the question, he mentioned 3,000 hits. I remember talking to Albert Pujols when he was about 5 years before retired and said, among the numbers that are in front of you, you know, which ones intrigue you? And he said 3,000 hits. You've got some numbers that are in front of you. You're going to be coming up on 400 home runs soon, 1,000 RBI. You're coming up on 1,000 walks. You have a lifetime 300 average. What number for you feels like, yeah, that number in particular would be fun?
Yeah, 1,000 ribbies is pretty cool. There's not one particular one. 400 homers would be special for sure. You know, when you think of like with Altuve, you know, 3,000 hits is a lot of hits, man. A lot of hits, and it's that's a big milestone. I think, you know, when you come up on 400 homers, I think that's pretty special, especially a guy that, you know, when I was coming out of the minor leagues, you know, a lot of guys that I wasn't one of them power hitters, but, you know, I think, 400 homers would be pretty cool. Hopefully get to 5.
Tell me what's different about hitting now versus when you first broke into the big leagues.
I think the overall pitching aspect is a lot different. You know, I was talking to a lot of guys about this. When I first came up, you know, you'd have starters that were more of, you have power guys, but you have starters that are more, you know, control guys that are throwing 91, 92, you know, that can spot up, have good off speed. And now you got guys coming up, you know, every pitcher that comes out there is, you know, 94, 95 plus. And then, you know, you had a couple guys out of the bullpen that would throw hard when I first came up. And then now it's like, seems like every bullpen's throwing a 100. Yeah, I was watching the Yankee game last night, or yesterday, when a couple of the guys came in from Oakland's bullpen, and that Miller kid was just throwing gas. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, they absolutely throw hard. Tell me a guy who right now, and I know how competitive you are, and you're not going to want to relent with anybody, but someone right now who can be a really tough at bat for you.
Really tough at bat for me? That's a good question. I faced Crochet in spring training for the White Sox. That was the first time seeing him. And he was tough to pick up. Long, lanky, throwing 100, nasty slider. He was one of the guys that stood out this year. There's obviously some bullpen guys. Cano guy from from Baltimore, just throwing sinkers. I've actually fouled off my foot last night. I'm still feeling it. So he's got some unbelievable stuff. So yeah, there's a few guys out there where you're like, man, you got to be on your game because you can't miss that one pitch. That if they do give you something to hit, you can't miss it. And that, after that, it's a grind to get that, put a good swing on a ball, you know, because they're locating well.
So your son, Beckham, before we got started, you were telling me he's an athlete. But I'm curious about your perspective on parenting, parenting your son. And I asked the question based on the fact that I got to spend some time with you and your dad, who had a very distinct feeling about how he wanted to raise you as an athlete.
Yeah. Speaking on my dad, I got to obviously give him, both my parents a lot of love for just letting me be me, and I'm trying to be the same way with my kid, with Beckham. I'm not forcing him to do anything. I want him to, have fun doing it. I'm not trying to make him do this, make him do that because I want him to play baseball or want him to play basketball or football or whatever it is. I just want him to, love the game and not, push him to do anything. My dad in my baseball career was there. When I went up to him and talked to him, if I wanted to go, play in the yard, he'd go out and play in the yard. But he never really forced me to do anything, forced me to do this, forced me to do that. And it kind of just, the love for the game kind of just built on because I wanted to do it. There was times that, it was, on a weekend and, could be going out with my friends fishing or something, and I had a baseball tournament, and he wouldn't force me to do it. I always wanted to do it, and I think that's what I'm trying to do as a parent for Beckham. Just let him figure out what he wants to do. I'm not forcing anything. And I think that helped me, huge. It's helped me now as a parent.
I lied. I got one more for you. I'm a Vikings fan. I want them to trade up to get a quarterback, maybe the fourth overall pick. You're an Eagles fan. They pick 22. What do you want?
I think maybe a young corner. You always can stack up. You always can get some. You always need some good defense, and defense wins championships. Obviously, I think that's we got some good cornerbacks, but I think bringing in a young stud, there's a lot of young cornerbacks in the draft. I think they go corner, or maybe I was reading stuff on social today. It was maybe trading up to get a tackle, to boost that line. So I know Howie's big on juicing up that offense and defensive line. So who knows what he's gonna do. But it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. When's it, Thursday?
Yeah, the draft starts on Thursday. Yeah. I know this, too. At some point, it's scheduled. The Eagles are scheduled to beat the Vikings. And it's a bummer. It feels like it happens every year.
My one of my good buddies back home are huge Vikings fans. And it's always a blast when we play you guys.
Oh, yeah. It's always a blast because you win by, 30 points. So – anyway,
who do you want? Who do you want the Vikings to get?
I want a quarterback, right? McDaniels, but I think he's going up the line too much. I don't know if I'm excited about May. I think I want McCarthy. If I want them to trade at the fourth spot to get McCarthy,
that's a solid choice. He's a winner, won a national championship, and he's it's going to be interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of. Draft day is always always interesting. And speaking of this, I was thinking with the draft picks for MLB, would it be more interesting if you could trade draft picks?
Oh, totally.
Would that spice things up?
Oh, completely. The reason why, a lot of teams stopped that's never been allowed in baseball because they always worried about, teams screwing it up and basically blowing up their future forever. But I think front offices now are savvy enough, and you want to use those you'd love to use those draft picks as assets,
It'd be interesting. When we were talking about it I was talking about it somewhere in the clubhouse when we were talking about the draft. It was like, man, what would it change? It would change I don't know how they would, like you said, it would have to be something, but it would be, it would definitely spice some things up a little bit.
Well, and I think it would give incentive to some of the, you know, some of the teams to call up the young players on time. Imagine if you were a franchise and you felt like that you were, you know, one or two power pitchers away and Paul Skenes was sitting there last summer and you, maybe you make a move because you feel like he could help you at the end of last year, beginning of this year.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about. I don't know if it ever happened, but hey, it was one of the conversations that popped up because obviously the draft with, you see all these draft picks getting traded up, trade this, trade down, and it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, I know this. Whoever the Eagles take or the Vikings take, it's going to lead to another Vikings loss to Philadelphia. That to me is much more important than winning the Super Bowl at this point. I'm tired of it. Mike, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. We have to start, though. This one of the scariest moments of my life during the Mike Trout interview. So he's on the phone and we're hashtag blessed over here where we have a nice setup where I can just have, you know, Mike Trout call my phone and then patch him over to you. But something was up with my computer and my computer was trying to take hold of the phone call and it resulted in a lot of beeping and Buster not being able to hear Mike Trout not being able to hear Buster, and it almost derailed the interview right in the middle of it, and I like couldn't breathe for like 2.5 minutes. So I blacked out in the middle of the interview. I don't know what you guys talked about. Very, very scary, and I was nervous about the whole thing.
Yeah, when we got done, it was like, you know, to hear your relief that we finished the interview with Trout talking to us from his car on his way to the ballpark. I knew that we were having some issues, but I wasn't sure what they were. It sounds like that you had a little AI issue over there.
Yeah, definitely some big problems, but it all worked out, and the interview was great. So yeah, we got that in our bag. So Mike Trout Day officially coming to a close here. Let's go to the tweets. We've got a bunch of voicemails. First up, here we go.
Hey Dad, it's me, Mr. Jakey. I have a question, but before I get to my question, I just want to say, I wish you'd stop talking about me on the air. It's super embarrassing, Dad. Everyone at school knows I'm a big Braves fan, and they're all saying, well, why don't you marry the Braves? Because you love them so much. It's super cringe, Dad. I don't like you talking about me on the air, so please just quit it.
Mr. Jakey and Jake, the same person, maybe, actually?
No, they are not. For the record, that was not my son, Jake. He had... Someone... He's pretty understated, my son is, but he's never told me to not talk about the fantasy ownership together, right? Or the fact that he's a big Titans fan, or the fact that he loves the Braves.
Or the Charlotte Hornets. That's his real secret, yeah. That he loves the Charlotte Hornets.
I mean, he is, you know this about him. He's a loyal fan when he roots for the Charlotte Hornets. Think about that.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. All right. And someone, if anyone has an A's podcast, please invite Mr. Jakey. He's got all sorts of conspiracy theories about the A's and John Fisher. Let's go to the next question here.
Hello, Buster. This is John from Scotland. Actually, I'm kidding. I'm from Baltimore, Buster. But, you know, you've mentioned a couple times in the podcast that you had a bad relationship or maybe not a great relationship with Cal Ripken Jr. And, well, I don't expect you to, you know, give us the details of why that is. I'm curious, you know, how is it that writers get sideways with particular players? And are there ways to repair that, or, you know, are there just things that are totally no-go zones for writers as they interact with players?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I'd say this, you know, I've talked with Tim Kirkjian, and I mentioned this on the podcast before, that I was like, man, you got pre-Iron Man Cal. You got to cover this really smart guy with such insights. I covered the Iron Man where every day there were 100 reporters going at him. And in my case, in the 2 years that I covered the team, first off, they finished under 500 the first year. And in the second year, they got off to a terrible start. And Cal was moved from shortstop to third base. And for a time, he was involved in this passive aggressive war with Davey Johnson, where Davey Johnson moved into third base without telling him first. He actually learned it from us in the media. And I was the messenger there. And of course, there are, you know, different things going on along where I don't think he approved. Would have loved to have had the same relationship with him that I had with Tony Gwynn, where Tony Gwynn just every day was dying to talk baseball. He loved to talk baseball. He found a lot of joy in that. Hal, on the other hand, I think his – and Derek Jeter was this way too. I think he was very wary about, you know, where these stories were going, which is why one of his first questions, not only for me, but for just about every reporter, was like, what's your angle, right? And the best example of that, this is a long story, but it's – so I was – you know, they in the first year I was covering him, he went up against David Cohn. And if I remember correctly, he was like 0 for 16 in his career against Cohn. And he got a couple hits, and they beat the Royals when David was pitching there. And after the game, I asked him, hey, you know, knowing your history, did you think about any adjustments? Did you try something different? Blah, blah, blah. Just, you know, stupid question, just normal question, baseball question. And Cal kind of looked down his nose at me, and I could tell right away he didn't like the question. And the next day, Brady Anderson, who I really like, Brady's a good guy, but he was kind of like Cal's spokesperson. He came up to me, he said, Buster, I just want you to know that was that showed that you don't know anything about baseball. It was a really stupid question. And I think what I said to Brady in response was, actually, Brady, it was kind of a benign question. It wasn't that big of a deal. And I can tell you this, if I asked Tony Gwynn the same question, he would go on for 10 minutes. Like, he would give me a great answer. And what Brady's point was is that anybody who knows anything about baseball knows that 16 games is a small sample size. And I said, you know, there are a lot of ways Cal could have answered that question. He could have said, no, it really didn't make a difference. You know, I went with the same approach. Or he could have, you know, gone to Tony Gwynn and explained, yeah, he made a couple changes. And I said, here's the other thing, too, is that, yeah, it does make a difference. And it's not too small a sample size. If he didn't have a consecutive game streak, he may have been benched. Right? Yep. Hitless against the pitcher. So yep. Managers, what I'm like, but it wasn't that it wasn't brain surgery. It was just a simple question. And so it was like pulling teeth in the 2 years that I covered Cal. And as I say, damn, he knows baseball. He's so smart. And I wish I'd been able to tap into that and done a better job. And that's, I feel like it's on me.
Interesting there. Brady Anderson running cover for Cal. Kind of being,
that's okay. Kind of being those henchman. Guys are really tight. And yeah. As I say, the one thing I remember, and I felt this way about Derek Jeter too, is that I always had to remember that they were besieged every day, right? Mm-hmm. They had a million people coming up. And I think that's part of the reason why they put walls up. Yeah. And maybe Tony Gwynn was just the outlier, that he just loved baseball conversation no matter who you were.
Yeah. Interesting story. Great story. Great question. Let's go to the next one. I think this is a good one too.
Buster and Taylor, this is Alistair from Birmingham, Alabama. Buster, quick question for you. I saw that Kirk Cousins threw out the first pitch for the Braves, I think on Sunday. Curious if you had the chance to say hello to him.
Did you say
hello? Yeah, so he was standing there waiting throughout the first pitch, and I saw him, and I texted Jake, my son, and I said, you're not going to believe who's here throwing out the first pitch. And I thought about going up and say something, and I was like, nah, you know what? He's going to be in our booth, and he was great in our booth. I don't know you heard it.
Yeah,
he was fantastic, you know, the back and forth. And I'm like, you know, he's got a million idiot fans coming at him, like all bitter. And I actually thought if I went up to him, I was going to say something along the lines of, hey, thanks for your time being the Vikings quarterback. Not only was he a good quarterback, but by all accounts, a great guy.
Man, you are, Buster, you are in a dark place right now because in Hembo's segment, you were rationalizing signing Sam Darnold. That screams therapy to me, man.
I think you're wrong there. You think I'm like trying to make the best of a bad situation? You wait, okay? I think they're going to be better than what you think they're going to be.
Right.
And what is increasingly a tough division when you're talking about the Lions, the Packers, and the Bears should be improved with Caleb Williams.
Of course. Yeah. All right, man. We'll see. I'm excited for the draft. I'm excited for them to take Drake May. That'll be fun.
By the way, I do think I misspoke about Jaden Daniels, right? I think I said McDaniels, like a basketball player. Basketball. I may have messed that up.
I think you got it right. But if you didn't, it's okay. It's a baseball podcast.
True.
PK Steinberg's not going to notice. It's fine.
Hey, crew. This is Andy from West Virginia. A big O's fan here. Out of these teams, Pirates, Brewers, Royals, which one do you think is best set up to succeed in the current playoff format? If the Orioles can't win it, which I hope they can, crossing my fingers, then I'd like to see one of these smaller market teams that play that type of baseball get a chance to win. All right, Buster, thank you for doing this.
Great question. Royals, I think because Cole Reagans, you know, if in fact he is a number one continues to pitch well as the number one type star. He's healthy going into the playoffs. Having two stars, I think, really plays well in October. And it feels like they're developing a home field advantage, too. Although I would say I mean, the Pirates, we'd pick them. Maybe is that if they had Paul Skeens in the big leagues. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, plenty of time for that to happen. You know, they could bring him up and he could break out for sure. I like the Brewers in that mix, personally.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Andrew Campbell here from Portland, Oregon. Buster, you know, this weekend I'm listening to the Yankees broadcast, and they were talking about Aaron Judge and Juan Soto in regards to the 2-3 holes and, you know, maybe potentially down the line swapping Aaron Judge and Soto, you know, maybe to unlock Judge a little bit and get him out of his funk. You know, I'm curious, you know, in your experience and your time as a reporter, you know, talking to these guys, these ball players, how important is it to these guys where they hit in the order, where their batting spot is?
There's no question. Players believe it's more important than stats analysts. Like Boog Sciambi and I have, you know, we've talked about this in the podcast, have famously gone back and forth where we have a major disagreement about whether or not lineup protection matters. And I say to him, like, look, I don't play, but all I hear from hitters all the time and pitchers and catchers about how their decisions are framed by who's in the on-deck circle. So I do think it makes a difference. And Boog's point is that, you know, there's no statistical evidence or proof that it actually makes a difference. And I said, well, that's because there's no way you can get at that. You can't get in the head of a catcher or pitcher after the fact about how that thinking was affected. You know, if the count is 1-0, how did it affect the choice of the 2-0, you know, the 1-0 pitch with the guy in the on-deck circle? You'd have to literally debrief both the pitcher and the catcher about how their decisions were framed by the guy in the on-deck circle.
There you go. All right, two emails here, and then we'll get out of here. Our pal Nancy Pred writes in, and Nancy is going to be delighted because she's a big Guardians supporter here, and she wants us to talk about them. She says, Guardians currently have the best record and by far the best run differential in Major League Baseball. Kwan and Josh Naylor are among the best hitters in the league. The team has lost one series by a game to the Yankees. Yet, if they're mentioned, it's along with a not that we expect this to continue comment or discussion of why Boston, for example, has been struggling. Nothing about Cleveland's hitting, fielding, pitching, new young manager, or heart. Throw a mid-market team a bone while they're excelling, please. We hear plenty about the Yankees, Red Sox, and Dodgers. Thanks. Well, Nancy, good news. Tom Hamilton on the podcast on Friday. There you go.
Play-by-play man for the Cleveland Guardians joining us on the podcast. He's confirmed on Friday, so a lot of fun, no question. I mean, I woke up today after and looked at the standings, and I was like, we got to do something with the Guardians. And even before, Nancy, I saw your email, we had Tom Hamilton confirmed to come on. So thank you for the suggestion.
We're all over it, and we're going to follow that up. We're going to bug Nancy because Jesse Swinier wants to know about the Red Sox playoff hopes right now or this early point in the season.
First off, I think the Red Sox have definitely outplayed expectations, but my God, every day it feels like somebody else goes down with an injury. I think this is right. In Sunday's game, their entire starting lineup collectively earns less than $10 million. Like they basically have a lot of having to play all these young guys, minimum wage guys, because of all the injuries they have. It's remarkable that they're hanging in there. As you and I talk, they're three games over 500. So pretty cool start for the Red Sox. And I mentioned we got the Red Sox playing host to the Chicago Cubs on Sunday Night Baseball this weekend.
Alrighty, good stuff, everyone. I didn't mention, but it's in the show notes. You can call the Bleacher Tweets voicemail line, 406-404-8460. You can email the show, bleachertweets@gmail.com, #BleacherTweets on Twitter. Shout out to Dave Hendon, Edward Rockman, David Campbell, Tricky Henderson in Milwaukee, and Noah in Pittsburgh. You should have said hello to Buster at the All-Star Game. He likes to hear from podcast listeners only, not anyone else.
That's it for today. My thanks to Mike Trout, who's always a fun conversation, to Hembo, to Taylor. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms.
Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.